It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. When reporter Katie Butler's father had a major stroke, her family had a lot of medical options, except the one that they most wanted, a humane and timely death for their dad. The Record's David Hyde spoke with Katie Butler yesterday about her new book. It's called Knocking on Heaven's Door, The Path to a Better Way of Death, and he joins me now. Hi, David.
Hi, Marcy.
Well, death.
Yeah, pretty heavy topic.
Yeah.
And for some reason, unlike sex, it's still taboo in our society. I think one of her goals in this book is really to get the conversation going about death and dying, to bring back this old idea, the idea of a good death. And she started out by telling me exactly what had happened to her father.
A year after the stroke, he developed a hernia. And to fix the hernia, he needed a cardiac clearance for the surgery. The surgeon, in a quite brief meeting, told my mother that he couldn't get the hernia surgery until he got a pacemaker because he had a slow heartbeat. Now, the slow heartbeat was not creating any health problems for my father, but there was a fear that under general anesthetic, they could create a problem. So my mother, being somewhat impulsive and very uninformed, just kind of shrugged and said, "Oh, well, yes." And the decision was not really thought through. It wasn't talked about with the family. And we didn't know at the time, that there were any alternatives, and B, that the pacemaker had a 10-year battery. And this poor man was 80, completely dependent on my mother, and not the kind of person who wanted to live in that kind of state for another decade.
So what did that mean, having a pacemaker? What were the consequences of that decision?
Well, the pacemaker just cues the heart to keep beating regularly. One way of dying naturally is to simply have your heart beat, slow down or stop, and die a fairly peaceful death. So that pathway to a natural and timely and merciful death was essentially blocked.
Author Katie Butler's new book is Knocking on Heaven's Door, The Path to a Better Way of Death. And he also ended up with dementia. How did that happen?
The pacemaker did not cause the dementia. He was an old, crumbling man, and our bodies age in 7,000 different cellular ways. He developed macular degeneration, which made him blind. His brain was slowly crumbling. He probably had what is called vascular dementia, where little mini strokes kill brain cells and brain pathways. He may have had Alzheimer's too. We really don't know. But the end result was that a life that had been so full and so rich and so vigorous first became just a struggle for a year or two. And then for the last 5 years, it became really a horror.
Katie Butler's book is about her father's debilitating stroke and her family's search for a good death. It's called Knocking on Heaven's Door. And you use a phrase in this book, medical overtreatment, that I think some people might not be familiar with. What do you mean by that, especially here in your father's case?
Yeah. I mean inappropriate high-tech treatment. For example, my father got $22,000 worth of hernia surgery and pacemaker insertion, but Medicare limited him to $1,500 a year for speech therapy that truly, truly benefited him. There comes a point toward the end of life when we need to shift from trying to cure the incurable to actually caring for the person who is right in front of us. And Medicare funds these high-tech treatments very, very well and is gimlet-eyed on things like the speech therapy that actually people really, really need a lot of little things like that that really can make a huge difference to quality of life toward the end.
I can imagine some doctors may be listening to this interview and saying to themselves, we try to make patients aware of risks, and there are risks. And in some cases, those decisions to seek medical treatment aren't the right decisions, but we kind of do our best to inform patients. How do you respond to that?
I call that the retail paradigm of medicine. It's like we're going to lay out a smorgasbord of choices and leave it all up to you. Unfortunately, often doctors kind of blue sky things early on in the process, and then at the very last moment when someone is on intensive care, then they suddenly turn all of the decisions over to the family, including the moral and the emotional burden. And I think that's really unfair.
Katie Butler's new book is about her father's stroke, major stroke. It's called Knocking on Heaven's Door. So what did you do personally after your father had a stroke? How did it change your life?
It totally changed my life. I was an independent, childless, divorced, freelance writer in California, happy to love my parents from a distance. And when I heard about my father's stroke, my whole life changed. My heart opened up. I melted. I flew back home as soon as I could, and I was very, very involved in trying to get him as rehabilitated as possible in the first years after the stroke, and also just to help my mother and give her moral support, help make medical decisions. So in some ways, this was a wonderful thing for me, even though it was a terrible thing for my father. It really allowed me to become really a better human being.
What role did you play in the medical decision-making or the caregiving? Yeah.
It happened on a spectrum. It changed slowly over time. At the very beginning, I was not even a player when the decision for the pacemaker was made. But as time progressed, my mother actually turned to me and said, "Will you help me get this pacemaker turned off?" Because at the time, I was writing health reporting for the New York Times. And so I was not a Times staff reporter, but I was a freelancer. And I was discovering things that we hadn't known, such as the pacemaker could be disabled painlessly, such as some bioethicists really believe that patients should be told at the time these devices go in that they can be disabled and that there may come a time when it's appropriate to disable them. So I became more and more proactive. And then after my father's death, when my mother's health declined, I became a very strong medical advocate for her, and it was an advocate for doing less rather than more.
So ultimately, how did this experience change the way you think about medicine?
It made me realize that we are involved in a flawed, fragmented, broken system that is full of perverse financial incentives that reward doctors for doing the wrong thing and financially punish doctors for doing the right thing. It made me realize that we all need to reclaim our moral authority and act the best we can out of love when we make these decisions. Because the language of medicine and even the law when we address these questions is really an impoverished moral language. And we really need to bring to it both our spirituality and our emotionality and our love to really make these decisions widely.
I remember growing up with stories like Brian's Song and a lot of really touching stories about medical problems and people. They're always about people kind of overcoming illness. But you're talking about kind of a different narrative, a different way of thinking about death and dying and illness. How does society get there? How do we transform to thinking about something like slow medicine?
Yeah, I call those sentimental narratives, and the media is full of them. I think there's a wonderful hospice doctor named Ira Byock who writes about five crucial emotional tasks for the end of life. And those are thank you, I love you, please forgive me, I forgive you, and goodbye. You can begin doing that work with your aging parents or your aging spouse. You don't have to wait for there to be a discussion about a DNR or an advanced directive. You can start this
emotional... That's a do not resuscitate.
A do not resuscitate. Uh-huh. Yes, you don't have to wait for a do not resuscitate order or an advanced directive. You can start this emotional work early, and the more you complete it, I think the easier it's going to be to really advocate intelligently for your parents as they enter this life's final mystery.
So that's the emotional side of it. But is there really such a thing as a good death? Death seems kind of awful and painful in a lot of cases. And I'm just wondering, is there any way to really plan to escape that?
I agree. I think there's really a lot of suffering in death. There's loss, there's pain, there's loss of control. And I think people can get tyrannized by the notion of a good death. But I do think we don't have to add unnecessary suffering to the innate suffering of dying. And right now we've created deaths that are more prolonged, more painful, and more expensive than they've ever been in history.
Katie Butler's new book is about her father's illness and her family's search and her search for a better way of dying. It's called Knocking on Heaven's Door. I was thinking about how our culture tends to swing from one extreme to the next. And so I can imagine a situation where, as now, we have this kind of medicalized approach to death, but perhaps we get to a situation where everybody's searching for the perfect death, the ideal death. I mean, is that something that you worry about even when you're writing about this kind of movement towards slow medicine and a search for better ways of dying?
Yes, it is, actually, because I think death is like going to the airport. You know, you lose control totally. You no longer have control of the timing or the manner of what is going to happen. And our technologies are so successful in so many areas that we think there's always going to be a workaround. And I think there's a great deal of surrender in this process and of forgiveness of oneself and forgiveness of the people we love, because it will not happen perfectly. It will be messy. It may happen too soon. It may happen too late. And all we can do is kind of do the best choices we can do and realize that there's no way to handle this perfectly.
How do you make that decision to say it's time for me or my loved one to die?
I think it's very individual. There are some people who are paraplegic and are having very, very full, happy lives. There are other people who feel their lives are not worth living. There are some people in their 80s with mild dementia who are really having a good time. I think you need to ask, has this person I love outlived their happiness? Are they in a position now where they're experiencing all the suffering of life without its joys and all the helplessness of death without its peace?
Katie Butler, thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, David.
That's Katie Butler. Her new book is called Knocking on Heaven's Door, The Path to a Better Way of Death. She spoke with The Record's David Hyde. I'm Marcy Silman.